Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
So glad you could be with us for this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We're going through the book, Mormon Enigma, Emma Hale Smith. And we come to the chapters, chapter 11, called The Poisoning. Here, the two authors, Linda King Newell and Valene Tippetts Avery, chronicle some of the tensions that were going on in the Smith marital relationship. They say that on August 6th, Emma went a second time to St. Louis to conduct business for Joseph, and while she was gone, Joseph told William Clayton that Emma had left Nauvoo upset with Clayton for taking his first wife's sister, Margaret Moon, as a plural wife. Clayton began to watch Emma with a wary eye. Now, isn't this interesting? There's this huge tangled web going on here with all these men marrying all these women and all the, boy, I tell you, what drama is going on in Nauvoo. But it is certainly causing a lot of problems because the word, they say, the word about the revelation spread quickly through Nauvoo.
As you would expect it would. Gossip everywhere.
Yeah, apparently. What had happened, Hiram Smith had taken the written revelation and showed it to a few men. So now more and more people are starting to know that this is going on. So the rumor is a fact. And people are going to find out about this. It's going to start spreading through the town like wildfire. So here's the problem. Smith is finding himself having to defend himself against his wife's negative feelings regarding plural marriage. Mm-hmm. It doesn't sound to me like Joseph Smith plans on backing off on this, but the authors tell an interesting story towards the bottom of page 158, where William Clayton reported under the date of August 16, 1843, quote, "This A.M., Joseph told me that since Emma came back from St. Louis, she had resisted the principle," and that would be the principle being plural marriage, mm-hmm, "in toto, and he had to tell her he would relinquish all for her sake. She said she would give him Eliza and Emily Partridge, but he knew if he took them, she would pitch on him and obtain a divorce and leave him. He, however, told me he should not relinquish anything."
Now, in the previous paragraph, did say that she did threaten divorce. Mm-hmm. So this is a real issue. And the image I think we get in the videos that the Mormons like to produce is this happy, idyllic relationship that Emma and Joseph have. And yet, here's the truth. They had real struggle in their marriage all the way until he died. These last couple of years are pretty tumultuous.
It certainly does not paint that picture in, for instance, the film Joseph Smith, Prophet of the Restoration. When you watch that film, in fact, I noticed that when I first saw that film, it gives you the impression that they were just starry-eyed lovers for each other. But certainly during the Nauvoo period, that was not the case. But anyway, Smith tells Emma that he would give up his wives, but he confided to Clayton that he did not intend to keep his word. Do we have here an admission that the true prophet of God, the founder of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, was willfully lying to his wife?
Well, lying and deceit is a big part of what Joseph Smith did throughout this book. We saw this over and over as we read the book. I want to just point out a church manual called Gospel Principles. It's a very common manual. Chapter 31 is about honesty. I want to read this, Bill, because when I read that, I thought, well, here the book is admitting that Joseph Smith did not tell the truth. And in chapter 31, page 181 of Gospel Principles, it says to lie is dishonest. And it says, "Lying is intentionally deceiving others. Bearing false witness is one form of lying. The Lord gave the commandment to the children of Israel, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Jesus also taught this when he was on the earth. There are many other forms of lying. When we speak untruths, we are guilty of lying. We can also intentionally deceive others by a gesture or a look, by silence, or by telling only part of the truth. Whenever we lead people in any way to believe something that is not true, we are not being honest. The Lord is not pleased with such dishonesty, and we will have to account for our lies. Satan would have us believe it is all right to lie. He says, quote, "Yea, lie a little. There is no harm in this," end quote. That's 2 Nephi 28:8 in the Book of Mormon. Satan encourages us to justify our lies to ourselves. Honest people will recognize Satan's temptations and will speak the whole truth, even if it seems to be to their disadvantage. The disadvantage for Joseph Smith here, Bill, is if he leads his wife on to think that he's going to keep his wives, he's in a lot of trouble. So the easier way for him is to not tell the truth and then privately tells another person, "I'm not going to do it."
And we know that he did lie to her several times. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
This book brings that out over and over, that Smith was lying to Emma about his plural relationships. He was lying to his own church members about it. So what do Latter-day Saints do with that? Will they look at it as, well, it was for the greater good? I don't know if gospel principles actually allows for it in this case.
Well, what greater good is there in lying about plural wives? And it just doesn't make any sense.
That's a good point. But anyway, the authors go on to say that the strain on both Emma and Joseph began to take its toll. But then they say that the personal tension between Emma and Joseph may have eased toward the end of the summer, when Emma seemed to have come temporarily to terms with plural marriage. Now, what does that really mean? This poor woman has been tossed to and fro on this subject. She's being manipulated by her husband to embrace it, because to do so is going to have some eternal good as far as her salvation. If she doesn't, it's going to lead to her eternal damnation. She doesn't like this principle, but yet she wants to please her husband, but at times her heart says she can't please her husband. So she's really being torn. Well, the authors talk about an incident that took place on Sunday, November 5th, where Joseph Smith suddenly becomes sick at dinner and vomited so hard that he dislocated his jaw and raised fresh blood. His self-diagnosis was that he had every symptom of poisoning, but he was well enough in the evening to attend an endowment council meeting in the room over the red brick store. According to current medical literature, no poison available in 1844 was caustic enough to pool blood in the stomach so rapidly after ingestion as Joseph's symptoms indicate, and still be so ineffective as to allow the victim to pursue normal activities within a few hours. Now, here's what's interesting, though. This so-called poisoning is mentioned by Brigham Young as late as 1866. Now, the authors are trying to say that Joseph Smith's self-diagnosis was inaccurate, that Emma really didn't poison Joseph Smith.
And by the way, it was his coffee, which I find to be interesting.
Yeah, she poisoned the coffee.
The word of wisdom has already come out, and so why is he drinking coffee?
Well, it's still at this point, it's more of a suggestion, but even Joseph Smith said that officers in the church were supposed to follow the word of wisdom. That would include Joseph Smith. So I still think that's a valid argument. Why is Joseph Smith drinking coffee when he was an officer in the church? But what does Brigham Young say about this alleged poisoning?
Well, he described a secret council, probably the November 5th meeting, at which he said Joseph accused Emma of the poisoning and, quote, called upon her to deny it if she could. He told her that she was a child of hell and literally the most wicked woman on this earth, that there was not one more wicked than she. He told her where she got the poison and how she put it in a cup of coffee. Said he, "You got that poison so-and-so, and I drank it, but you could not kill me." When it entered his stomach, he went to the door and threw it off. He spoke to her in that council in a very severe manner, and she never said one word in reply. I have witnesses all around who can testify that I am now telling the truth. Twice she undertook to kill him, end quote.
Well, that's quite an interesting quote coming so many years after the fact.
Yeah.
And of course, it is a controversial story. There's no doubt about it. There are people that certainly did come to Emma's defense after the story was being circulated. But I guess we will never really know if, in fact, there was no poison at that time that would have the effects that we see in this particular story. It could be that Smith was wrong in his self-diagnosis. But that people thought that Emma might be vindictive enough to do something like that tends to once again point to the fact that there was just a little bit of tension in the Smith home.
And I think that's an important point to point out for this book. On page 164, two-thirds of the way down, the authors say that Joseph did believe it at the time that Emma poisoned him, but strong evidence suggests that his self-diagnosis was mistaken, and therefore so was his accusation of Emma. But it didn't go away, as you mentioned with Brigham Young, and so there was possible motive that Emma could have had, and people would have known that maybe she wanted to see something happen to her husband because she so disliked this idea of polygamy.
In that story where Brigham Young tells that, talks about this alleged poison, he says, "To my certain knowledge, Emma Smith is one of the damnedest liars I know of on this earth." Obviously, Brigham Young did not like Emma Smith.
No.
And while Emma Smith didn't really like Brigham Young, in fact, when the Saints left for the Salt Lake Valley eventually, she didn't follow them. She stayed behind and she raised her children in Nauvoo. And then, of course, she was very much an instrument in the founding of the Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints when Joseph Smith III, her oldest son, was old enough to take over in that capacity. It's an interesting story. We'll probably never really know the facts regarding it, but it does seem odd that Brigham Young would tell this story, and he tells it in a conference message. And remember, Mormons are told that if something is said in a conference message, as Dieter Uchtdorf has said recently, that's like God speaking through his servants. So you would think that the Mormons that were listening to Brigham Young at that time certainly believed that he was telling the truth. Now, whether he was or not, we'll probably never know. Anything to add on that?
Well, no, I find this whole situation to be quite illuminating as far as the character of Brigham Young and also the possibility that Emma could have, Joseph could have thought that Emma, his wife, could have done that.
Well, that's a good point. For him to even make that accusation shows that there's problems here.
Yeah.
And so when you see films that show Joseph and Emma looking so happy together during the Nauvoo period, you can be sure that that's probably nothing but hyperbole.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Here's something to think about. Are you confidently prepared to share your faith with your Latter-day Saint friend or acquaintance? Do you feel you have an adequate grasp of Mormon doctrine and history? Well, if not, then we encourage you to attend Mormonism Research Ministries' Compassionate Boldness Symposium coming up on Saturday, July 27th. This four-hour event will take place at the Adventure Church in Draper, Utah. MRM's Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson will focus on such issues such as the Book of Mormon, the Godhead, and salvation. Special emphasis will be made on how to answer LDS proof texts and the questions Mormons may pose. Now again, the event is free and open to the public, so everyone is invited to come. For those who would like to do further research, a book table will also be available. This Compassionate Boldness Symposium will take place starting at 9 a.m. on Saturday, July 27th at the Adventure Church in Draper. Simply take the 123rd South exit off the I-15. The church is located right there at 352 West and 123rd South. We look forward to seeing you there.